The Retirement Conversation focuses on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join Joe and Dennis and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll take away practical ideas and tips to create your own. At Retirement Wisdom, we as retirement coaches help people think through their transition into retirement, as well as those who are in the early part of retirement but are looking for more from this stage of their lives. To find out more about us and how we can help you, you can schedule a free, no-obligation consultation with us. Simply go to retirementwisdom.com. On the top left corner, click on Get a Free Consultation. We would welcome the opportunity to speak to you. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to today's Retirement Conversation with our guest, Sam Horn. Sam is the CEO of the Intrigue Agency, as well as an international keynote speaker, author, and book consultant. She has spoken to more than 500,000 people worldwide and for hundreds of organizations, including National Geographic, Cisco, Fortune 500 Forum, Intel, Ernst & Young, Capital One, and NASA. She has been interviewed on dozens of network TV and radio shows, including NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox, and on NPR and MSNBC, and has been profiled, quoted, or published in publications including The Washington Post, The New York Times, Business Week, Forbes, Huffington Post, Reader's Digest, Cosmopolitan, and the Boston Globe. Sam is the author of several previous books, including the Washington Post bestseller, Got Your Attention.
Great to have you here today. And I'm curious, what inspired you to write your latest book, Someday Is Not a Day of the Week?
I will always be grateful to my son, Andrew. I had just finished a very intensive consult in Southern California, and he called and he sensed something in my voice. And he said, "What's up, Mom?" And I said, "Andrew, I am so exhausted. I don't even know how I'm going to get on that plane tonight. I've got to fly back to the East Coast and then fly back in a couple of days." And he said, "Mom, there's something about you I don't understand. You've created a life where you can do just about anything you want to, and you're not taking advantage of it." He said, "You have your own business." He said, "You have more autonomy than you think." And I thought, out of the mouths of 20-somethings, and I realized I was on this aircraft carrier. And Joe, do you know how you stop an aircraft carrier?
No, I've tried several times, but nothing worked.
Well, you don't. You can turn off the engines, and it has so much mass and momentum, it continues for 10 miles under its own steam. And his observation helped me realize that my career had become an aircraft carrier. And I was doing the same thing I'd been doing for the last 20 years. And I liked my life. I'm very grateful for it. But it was time for me to do something differently. I launched my year by the water and took my business on the road, and it was one of the best things I've ever done.
So tell us more, if you could, about your year by the water and what you learned from it.
Paulo Coelho said, "One day we're going to wake up and there won't be any time left to do the things we've always wanted to do." And so what I have found is that many of us feel that, well, I've got to pay bills, or I've got a family to take care of, or I'm taking care of a parent with a health challenge, and we feel we can't do things. What I learned is, like, what did I want to do? I wanted to spend more time by water. I wanted to write more. I was kind of in the creative consultant conundrum. I was actually spending more time helping other people get their TEDx talks and books and business and brands out in the world than I was spending on my own. And what I realized is that I could have the best of both worlds. I could do more of what I wanted now and not someday. And on that year by the water, I realized I could blend my work and recreation. I didn't have to silo them. I didn't have to separate them. I didn't have to feel like, well, first I get my work done and then I can have fun. No, I could do it all. I can travel. I can visit bodies of water. I can write about them. I can still coach, still speak, still write. And that's what I learned from my year by the water, is that we think someday we're going to do more of what we want. Well, now is the new later. Why don't we start doing now more of what we want instead of assuming that we can do it someday?
There's a statement on the jacket of your book that jumped out at me. Life is too precious to postpone. But why do you think people procrastinate and end up deferring their dreams?
The comedian Judy Tenuta said, "My parents always told me I wouldn't amount to anything because I procrastinated so much. I told them, just you wait. Well, I think many of us wait. And if we're going to drill it down, why do we procrastinate? John Cotter out of Harvard actually has a theory. He says, do you know what the number one prerequisite is to change? A sense of urgency. And see, I think that many of us assume this automatic tomorrow. We don't have a sense of urgency because we are assuming that it'll wait. It'll be there for us. And my dad, he worked hard all of his life for the state of California. He was in charge of agriculture education, was in charge of the FFA program, and he always wanted to see the national parks. And so he was going to do that when he retired. Well, a week after he retired, he took off, and a week later he had a stroke in a hotel bathroom. And he never got to see Banff and Zion and all those beautiful Rocky Mountain parks that he always planned to do. And it was because he assumed that he could do it, and he deferred it. So if there's any message out of this book, it is, what is something that you are promising yourself, you're planning to do when you retire, when you have more time, when the kids go off to college, when you're not quite so busy? Well, what if that someday never happens? Rene Ricard said, tomorrow is another day, but so was yesterday. So hopefully we stop deferring and we start doing something on a daily basis that puts the light on in our eyes.
And in your book, you write about life hacks as tools to prevent regrets. Where should someone start to generate the right sense of urgency?
They can start right now, Joe. It's if people, as long as they're not driving, if they get a piece of paper out and draw a box on it in 2 minutes, we can do the happiness box. Because some people say, Sam, it's been so long since I've done what I want. I don't even know anymore what I want. I've been so responsible to everyone else. I've been putting everyone else first and myself last. So if you have a piece of paper, you just draw a box on it. Now draw it into four quadrants. And the upper left box is square one. Upper right box is square two. Lower left is square three. And lower right is square four. And by the way, Joe, this happiness box is on my website. People can print it out and take it to a meal with a friend and answer it and discuss it. People have told me that this little two-minute quiz has led to the most honest, revealing, intriguing, and insightful conversations they've had in a long time. So do you want to play with that box right now, Joe?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. In box number one, which is the upper left, what are you doing in your life that you want to? So maybe what you're doing in your life that you want to is you're spending time with your family. Maybe what you're doing that you want in your life is that you're walking your dog every morning. Maybe what you're doing in your life right now is you're traveling and visiting places that have been on your bucket list. So what are you doing that you want to? Maybe you're saving money for retirement. You're stashing it away so that it'll be there for you when you're ready for it. Okay, box number two, upper right. What are you not doing that you want to? And maybe you're not getting enough sleep, or maybe you're not meeting your soulmate, or maybe you're not exercising, or maybe you're not eating right, or maybe you're not starting your own business, or maybe you're not writing that book that you've thought about for so long and promised yourself you would do. So what are you not doing that you want to? All right, let's come down to box three, lower left. What are you doing and you don't want to? And maybe you're commuting 2 hours every day, or maybe you're working 50, 60 hours a week, or maybe, you know, I always remember thousands of people have filled out this box. One person said, I'm spending way too much time watching TV. I come home, I turn it on, and the next thing I know, it's 10, 11 o'clock, and there went another day. So maybe we're watching too much TV or spending too much time on social media. So what are you doing that you don't want to? Maybe you're fighting with someone that you care about. Now, over in box four, what are you not doing and you don't want to? And yes, if we have an English major listening, that is a double negative. And it's important, though. Maybe we used to smoke and we quit and we are not doing it and we don't want to anymore. I have a fellow speaker friend who put huge in that box, red eyes. She used to be a single mom. She would fly to a speaking engagement and she would take the first flight home so she could get back to her kids. Well, she'd been doing that even when her kids went off to college out of habit. She was still flying into a city and speaking and then taking the first flight home, often the red eye. And she's not as young as she used to be. And those red eyes just exhaust her. In the next couple, 3 days, she's not herself. And so she quit taking red eyes. And she started flying into cities and adding a day or two to explore the cities. She never had the freedom to do that before. But she realized she's been on that aircraft carrier doing what she's always done, always flying back home. But why? So she quit doing red eyes, and she doesn't miss them, and she doesn't want to do them anymore. So what is something in that box? Maybe you used to work for someone else, and now you have your own business, and you never again want to work for someone else. Okay, let's interpret the answers. Please circle the answers in box 1 and 4, and that's what I call your Bill of Rights. That's what's right with your life. Be sure and keep those things in those boxes because they are the answers to your happiness test. There is no mystery to it. We know exactly what is contributing to our quality in life. Those were gut answers. They were top of mind. Now, circle the answers in square 2 and 3. And you can see this one coming. That's what's wrong with our life. Those are regrets waiting to happen. Those are where the somedays lurk. Have you ever flown in and out of Dulles Airport outside of D.C., Joe?
Oh, yes.
Okay, you know it well. Well, John Foster Dulles said, the mark of a successful organization isn't whether or not it has problems. It's whether it has the same problems it had last year. So see, I don't know anyone who's perfect. So we're always going to have answers in square 2 and 3. But you know what the question is? How long? How long have we not been doing these things we know we want to do? How long have we been doing these things we don't? Maybe it's time in square 3 to stop watering dead plants. Maybe it's time in box 2 for us to understand what John Legend said, which is tomorrow is already here and we're already late. And so that's what the book is about. That's what my workshops are about. How can we act on what's in square 2 and 3, so our life is more of what we want it to be now and not later. By the way, Joe, I really do recommend is that what I have found in marriages or in life, often resentment start creeping in. I've had so many couples who have printed out this happiness box, filled it out, and then agreed to honestly talk about their answers. Because so many of us are so accustomed to taking care of everyone else but ourselves is that we feel responsible. So we put off these things that are calling us, that used to give us joy, but we feel we just don't have time for. And Esther Hicks said, my happiness is on me, so you're off the hook. And if there's anything people take away from this, it is not selfish to do one thing every week that puts the light on in our eyes. It actually sets a precedent that gives the people around us permission to do the same. So fill out the box, talk about it with loved ones. You'll probably learn something that they're putting off, something that they've abandoned, that is eating away at them, and that the relationship immediately gets better when everyone involved takes responsibility for doing one thing that makes them look forward to their days instead of just going through the days on automatic pilot.
Thank you for that. And you mentioned TV coming up. I'm wondering if you also are starting to see people highlight social media as something that they'd like to get away from and do less.
It's actually especially age-related. I find that people over 50, it is TV, and people under 50, it's often social media. And you know all the statistics about that we have an epidemic of isolation and loneliness and unhappiness, that for all of our luxuries, so to speak, is that we are actually unhappier than we were 10 and 20 and 30 years ago. And often it is because we've become spectators instead of participants, is that we're scrolling through social media and we're watching everyone else's life and we're comparing. And if we don't quit comparing, comparing will cause us to quit because we actually spiral down into depression. And if we're sitting and watching TV, we are not out there having those experiences ourselves. So can I tell you one of my favorite stories about someone who filled out the happiness box, had the realization that what was going on in his life in box three was that he was watching way too much TV, and it was actually keeping him from doing things that would make his life what he wanted it to be. Well, in box three, this was actually a young man right out of Virginia Tech who had gotten a job as an executive recruiter. Now, on paper, it was perfect. He was making good money. He had a corner office in a building downtown in D.C., and so he should have been really happy. He was using his business management major, et cetera. But a year after he had this job, I had dinner with him, and the light had gone out of his eyes. And I said, Andrew, what's going on? He says, Mom, I want to quit. I said, you want to quit? I said, what do you want to do? He said, I want to start a nonprofit. Well, normally I'm very supportive, but right on the tip of my tongue was nonprofit health insurance. But we went into his happiness box. What was happening is that this was a soul-sucking job. He would come home and he would, in box three, he would turn on the TV, and then it'd be 11 o'clock and the next thing, you know, next day, rinse and repeat. Well, what he wasn't doing in box two, what he was not doing that he wanted to, he was not working out the way he wanted to. He was not meeting young women the way he wanted to, and he was not starting this nonprofit. So guess what Andrew did, Joe? He gave away his TV. Because here's the thing. See, now he didn't want to come home. This was actually before a lot of social media. He didn't want to come home because there was nothing to do. So he started going to the gym. Well, he met this wonderful young woman who told him about something called the Affinity Lab. And the Affinity Lab is a co-work space where back then for $100 a month, he could start his nonprofit. So he would quit work and he would go to the gym for an hour, and then he would go and for 2 or 3 hours a night, he would sit at this co-work desk and he would work on this nonprofit called Dreams for Kids. Well, the first week he was there, someone walked by and said, well, Andrew, what are you working on? And he said, well, I'm trying to get in touch with the Parks and Recreation so that we can rent this lake and have an adaptive accessibility event where actually kids with disabilities get up on water skis for the first time in their life. And the person said, well, that's Rob. He's a friend. Here's his number. Tell him I referred you. And that event ended up happening. And a few weeks later, someone walks by Andrew's desk and says, so Andrew, what's going on? And he said, I'm trying to get funding, but all these grants are so confusing. He said, oh, well, here's my template for my proposal. It's helped us get $500,000 in funding. You're welcome to use it. Well, Dreams for Kids now has helped thousands of people with disabilities get off the sidelines and into the games of life. They've played hockey with the Stanley Cup champions, right? And do you know what? None of that would have happened if Andrew hadn't given away his TV.
Sometimes those single moves can change everything.
Joe, we just talked about proactive pivots, and you were talking about how the role that's played in your life. And I'm reaching out to everyone listening is that if they will change one thing in box three, it will often free up the time or the money or the energy or the wherewithal to do something in box two. When I was on my year by the water, people would hear what I was doing and they would gaze wistfully off into the distance and they would say, someday I'm going to do something like that. And when I asked him why, so often they felt locked in, trapped, stuck, that they couldn't do anything differently. And it doesn't take a wholesale change of your life. Often, like Andrew, he gave away his TV, and it gave him back his evenings. It gave him a reason to go to the gym, which led him to meeting someone that introduced him to something he hadn't even heard of. It wasn't even on his radar screen. So if we change one thing, it often sets up a ripple effect, and in a week or a month, our life could be infinitely better than it is now. And all we have to do is take one step.
Sam, how important do you think it is for people to have a support mechanism? Sound like Andrew was supported by a number of people, perhaps probably mostly yourself, to help make that change, to build that courage.
I love that question. Please, I hope people write this down. People can't jump on our bandwagon if it's parked in the garage. So yes, ask, what do you think? What are your suggestions? What do you recommend? And I was in Morro Bay, California. I was going to be speaking at a writer's conference. So every morning I go for a walk. And if people have been to Morro Bay, California, they know about that big rock. And while I walk, I listen to my favorite two songs, which is James Taylor, The Secret of Life, is Enjoying the Passage of Time, and Colin Hayes, Waiting for My Ship to Come In, Waiting for My Real Life to Begin. Well, I'm walking to the rock, and here is a cluster of people standing on the shore, pointing out through the fog to the mouth of the harbor. Well, I'm curious. I go over. I say, what's happening? And they say, oh, the replica ship, the San Salvador, is coming in today on its maiden voyage. Well, I hip-hop it out to the rock, and there emerging out of the fog is the San Salvador. And I think, oh, my ship has come in. Well, the next day I'm giving my keynote, and I say that writers do not wait for their ship to come in. They write their way out to it and meet it halfway. And a woman came up to me after the keynote and said, my brother-in-law, Ray Ashley, is actually the captain of the San Salvador. Would you like to meet him? Would I like to meet him? So the next day I'm below decks and he tells me the story of the San Salvador. So I'm going to condense this. But suffice it to say, the San Diego Maritime Museum isn't doing too well. So Ray has this brilliant idea of having this community project where they build this replica ship. He knew it would get a lot of attention. It would be something that would really put the San Diego Maritime Museum into the spotlight. They made a pivotal decision. They built the ship in public instead of in private. They built it right by the freeway going to the airport. So thousands of people driving by are aware of it, instead of it being out of sight, out of mind. And Ray said the first week we had 50 volunteers. Because see, we're right by the Naval Air Base there. So we had shipbuilders, we had riveters, we had neurosurgeons. And those volunteers are the reason why this succeeded. He said there was only one kind of wood in the world we could use for the hull of this ship. We bought up the entire supply. After shaping the hull, we put the epoxy on it. The epoxy was bad. It ruined all of the wood. Well, one of our volunteers saved the day and said, well, I know a wood expert. Why don't you give him a call, explain what happened, see what he can do? Well, this expert searched the world and found the only other kind of wood that would support this and gave it to him at a price they could afford. A few months later, it's time to put lead in the hull. And the price of lead had skyrocketed. They could no longer afford it. The project screeched to a halt. Once again, one of their volunteers came to the rescue. First, they sponsored a Get the Lead Out campaign. I mean, people bringing in their ball bearings and everything, but they're never going to get enough lead that way. And this volunteer said, well, I used to work for a contractor out in the valley. I think they may have some lead. Why don't you give them a call? Well, they called the contractor. He said, how much do you need? I think I've got my figure right. 80,000 pounds. They needed like 80,000 pounds of lead. The guy said, well, let me check. I'll get back to you. Next day he calls and he says, I've got 90,000 pounds of lead and I'll give it to you free. Well, now the San Salvador is finished and sailing up and down the coast of California. And it never would have happened if they had built it in private instead of in public. So what that means is do we have some kind of dream, some kind of goal, some kind of passion project, but we're keeping it to ourselves? If we're keeping it to ourselves, we are abdicating the opportunity for the volunteers, quote unquote, to jump on our bandwagon and help make it happen. Oh, you're at an impasse? Call so-and-so. They've been there, done that. They can help out. Oh, you've run out of this? Well, call so-and-so. They may have just what you need. So I'm reaching out to everyone listening is fill out that happiness box. And when you identify something that would put the light on in your eyes, Start talking to people about it. Start telling people about it. Ask for their input. Ask for their assistance. Because when we go public, instead of keeping it private, I think that we stop waiting for our ship to come in and we work our way out to it and other people jump on.
Great advice. Thank you. I love these stories. People create bucket lists, but if they don't do anything with them, then they're just as good as wallpaper. It's a great incentive to try things, do the smallest thing as you talked about, and then make a decision and move on because all these other things start to potentially open up for you. It's very inspiring.
In fact, if you have time, we're going to go back to your question about urgency because I have a wonderful story about how we can give ourselves a sense of urgency. So if we have time, I'll tell a story. And this is why these stories resonate. They're all true. They're all real life. People who are skeptics or jaded or who think, you don't know my life. You don't know what I deal with on a daily basis. And you're right. I don't know your life. All I know is that I know thousands of other people who felt they did not have options, who have changed their life by doing it. And I think when we share those stories, that's when we start believing, well, if they could do it, maybe I can too.
I'd love to hear any other stories because they are resonating.
You bet. Well, let's go back to what John Cotter said about the number one prerequisite to change is a sense of urgency. Well, I was doing a someday workshop in Waikiki, and we had filled out our happiness box, and one woman raised her hand, and she said, you know what I'm not doing that I want to? I want to be more adventurous. She said, I've always been risk-averse. I've always been kind of afraid to do things by myself or to do things differently. She said, how do you get over that fear? And I said, all right, here's exactly how we get over our fear. Number one is we put a date on the calendar because just saying I'm going to get over my fear is way too vague and vague promises don't happen. If it's not on the calendar, it won't get done. So I said, when do you leave Hawaii? And she said, 2 days. And I said, all right, we're going to put a date on the calendar. Tomorrow is the day. I said, what is a fear that you want to overcome? And she said, well, here's one. She said, I watched Jaws when I was a kid. Big mistake. She said, Here I am in a hotel on the water, and I haven't put a toe in that water because I'm so afraid. And I said, all right, A, we're going to put a date on the calendar tomorrow. B, we're going to hack the fear so the daunting becomes doable. I said, do you know about the natatorium? She said, what's that? I said, well, it's right here in Waikiki, down, if you face the oceans, down to the left by the Sanssouci Hotel. It's where Duke Kahanamoku used to train for the Olympics. And it's only 3 feet deep, so you can't get in over your head. There's only one opening in the seawall, so the surf can't get in, and neither can the sharks. Now, the third thing is to make this experience metaphorical so it's more memorable and it's more meaningful. She said, well, what do you mean? I said, you're going to set your alarm clock for 6 o'clock. She said, why would I do that? I said, because the sun comes up over Diamond Head at 6:30. So you are going to be at water's edge and you are going to go into the water, a more adventurous life when the sun peaks up over Diamond Head. I said, now I promise you, when that alarm goes off, you're going to want to roll over, pull the covers up, put your head under the pillow and call me some names. I said, ask yourself this question. What will matter a year from now? Will it matter a year from now that I got an extra hour of sleep? Or will it matter a year from now that I finally did something in my life to get over my fears and I started living life and making the most of it instead of living in fear? And she said, okay. And I said, there's one more thing. I said, the fourth thing, the way to give ourselves an urgency, one, put something on the calendar. Two is to hack the fear so the daunting is doable. Three is to go ahead and make it meaningful so it's memorable. And number four is get an accountability buddy to keep you accountable for your promise and to celebrate it with you when you do it. I said, so who's your accountability buddy? And she said, you. I said, okay, you send me a picture of you there at water's edge or when you come out so that you're already seeing it as a done deal. And so that you know that someone there is waiting to hear from you that you did it so you can celebrate with them. Well, Joe, guess what I got 2 days later? A picture of Bev grinning from ear to ear. And it is such an example of, if we're waiting, nope, turn it into urgency by doing those four steps. And you know what? A week from now, we could have gotten courage to change something, because actually change doesn't take courage. It takes clarity.
Sam, the 10 life hacks that you recommend in your new book are inspiring, they're practical, and sometimes they're counterintuitive. When I read it, I especially loved, do the opposite of your always. When and how can that be useful to people?
I love this question, and here's why. I had an opportunity to squire Arthur Frommer around Washington, D.C. years ago. You know, Arthur Frommer was the one who came up with Europe on $5 a day, right? He disrupted the whole perception back then that you had to be rich to travel. I mean, if you can go to Europe on $5 a day. And the question that all the reporters asked was, you've been to the Taj Mahal, you've been to the Great Wall, what's your favorite place? And do you know what he always said? He said, my backyard. But then he followed it by saying, the purpose of a vacation is to provide contrast. If you make decisions all day long, maybe you just want to go on a vacation, not make decisions. If you're around people, maybe you want to go to an island without a lot of people. But what we're talking about is contrast. And one of the number one lessons that I learned was that I got rid of 95% of my belongings. And the reason is that clutter is not just what's on the floor. It is often what is keeping us from the life we want to lead, is that the accumulation of stuff often keeps us stuck. I was very fortunate. I had a friend and she came, and now I had some beautiful stuff. I had accumulated it over years. But do you know how much time and money and energy we spend taking care of our stuff, cleaning our stuff, organizing our stuff, looking at our stuff? And often it is keeping us in the current status quo. So when I looked at my stuff, I realized that I can't give that away. Do you know how much that cost? But my friend Mary would say, Sam, are you going to use it in the next year? Well, no, I'm not. Can you fit it in your car? Well, no, I can't. Does it deserve to be in a pod for the next year or two or three? No, it doesn't. So if we believe that things have energy, then I gave away all my sports stuff to my personal trainer. I gave away my nice bedroom furniture and dining room set to Martha, who had taken care of our house for the last 12 years. And do you know what? I don't miss any of it. I realized that letting it go freed me to go. And in the chapter in the book, Let It Go, Let It Go, Let It Go, I talk about a client of mine who is one of the world's experts on collectors. And she tells me her heart breaks every day because she has collectors getting in touch with her and finding out that their kids do not want all their china, all their silverware, all of their crystal. They do not want this wonderful furniture that they've collected. And it's now what? And I really hope that each of us talks about the role that joy, that stuff is playing in our life. Because for many of us, everything we've accumulated, even the big, beautiful house, it's not sparking joy anymore. It's become a chore. And maybe it is keeping us from the life we really want to lead. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I think you're preaching to the choir only because my wife has recently gone through the Marie Kondo process. And she loves to tell the story of the fact that when she brought it up, I said, I read that book, and said, oh, really? Where is it? So, well, I can't really find it right now, but I'll get back to you. So,
Good story, Joe.
Well, we've been this way. We've known each other for over 41 years now. And she has been that way from day one, and I've been more of the saver. She threw away my practice basketball shorts in 1980, and I'm just starting to forgive her now. But my gold shorts. But no, I think it's very important. And I think the way you framed it, it was very powerful.
Ann Lander said it, Joe, is that the most important things in life aren't things. There is a season of our life when building a home and filling it with meaningful things and creating a home for ourselves and our family. That is absolutely an important season of life. We go back to habits, though, and at some point, maybe we're on an aircraft carrier with our stuff, and maybe we look around and the beautiful home that we've created with all the beautiful accumulated things, maybe they have served their purpose. And I cannot tell you how many people have downsized or right-sized. Their lifestyle was such that I can't go on vacation. It's like, I've got this big home I got to pay for, or I can't do that because I've got to do chores this weekend, or we're in the middle of refurbishing, et cetera. So I hope we look at that default and maybe there's a different way, maybe even a better way.
And Sam, you wrote a great piece on MarketWatch recently on half retiring. We'll include it in the show notes along with the link to the happiness box on your website. But what you're advocating in that article is quite different, seems to me, than just scaling back to part-time. How would you describe the essence of half-retiring?
Yo, I'm so glad you brought this up because, see, part-time is doing the same thing, just less of it. So whatever it is we're doing, instead of working 60 hours or 50 hours a week, we work for half that. Well, I believe half-retiring is that we don't keep doing the same thing. We look in our life about what we really love to do. And instead of seeing that, well, I'll have more fun when my work is done. Or I have my profession and I have my passion. I have my work and I have my recreation. Instead of seeing those as separate, what if we can blend them so we have the best of both worlds right now? So here are two stories about how we can half retire. Is that I had the privilege of working with Rod Laver in the tennis industry for many years. And when I was living in Maui, I ran the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years. And I had a buddy, Kathy, who was one of the top realtors on the island. We usually played tennis two or three times a week. Well, then the economy tanked and Kathy said, Sam, I can't play tennis anymore. I got to do biz dev. See, she saw tennis as being indulgent, as being frivolous, as something to do in her spare time. And see, now she perceived that tennis was something she couldn't do anymore because it was taking her away from her work. But I said, Kathy, we live in Wailea, right down the street from the tennis club, our two five-diamond hotels, the Grand Wailea and the Four Seasons. Why don't you go down to the concierge, explain you're a 4-5 tennis player, you're looking for some good games, and if they have some guests that are looking for matches, you'd be glad to play. Well, within 2 weeks, she was back to playing two or three times a week, but this time with people who were staying at the hotel, and see, that is a five-diamond hotel. And now she did not push her business, but after a nice game of tennis, it was very natural to have some iced tea and people say, so what do you do when you're not playing tennis? Oh, I'm a realtor. Oh, what's going on? Well, actually, we got some properties that are, you know, quite affordable and they're normally not. And well, can I see them? Sure. And what I have many, many people that I've had an opportunity to coach, we see what we do in our spare time as something that we abandon when we get busy. We don't have time for it. Aha. What if our photography could actually be biz dev? What if the things we love to do in our spare time could actually be an opportunity to connect with clients, connect with colleagues who can recommend us or hire us, or use our services or products? So you want another example of how we can half retire? Because see, now Kathy has scaled back. She's no longer working as many hours as she used to, but guess what? She's still playing tennis because it's the best of both worlds, right? If people are thinking, huh, so how could I do that? I actually recommend that the next time there's a quality craft fair in your area that you go. Because I project you are going to meet a lot of people of a certain age who are half retired. Here's one of my favorite examples is that I was on my year by the water. I was in Savannah and I was staying at a hotel on the waterfront right next to the convention center. Here's the springtime art and craft fair. It's one of the best in the South. So I'm walking along and I'm talking with people in their booth. Well, here is a couple. And she, for Christmas one time, made white chocolate macadamia nut toffee. Well, it worked out so well, is that people start saying, wow, this is great. Can you make up a batch? I'd like to give it as a birthday present. Or can you make up a batch and I'd like to actually give it at our Christmas party to our employees? So she started going to craft fairs, and she came home one time and her husband was an executive with Marriott. And she told him, people are driving from hundreds of miles to come to craft fair to buy my white chocolate macadamia nut toffee. Well, he thought, well, that's great. Good for you. But it wasn't until she needed help one time and he went to work with her and help out that he saw for himself, my goodness, this is an incredible business. So he quit his job as an executive at Marriott and in order to help with that business. Well, now they've scaled. It's international. They were one of Oprah's favorites, and they have a very thriving global company, but now they have half retired because they set up a succession plan. And yes, they still go to, we haven't been in that city, and this is a great craft fair. We've never been. They do the new. And so they are doing exactly what they love at halftime. But see, once again, they blended their work and recreation. They blended their passion and their profession, and they aren't doing it just part-time. They're half retiring because they're doing something that puts the light on in their eyes. They're leading a life they love, and they're making income all on their own terms. That's what it means to half retire.
If someone who's listening right now is considering retirement, what advice would you offer them on how they can explore half retiring instead?
Okay, it's back to the paper. Do you have notes in front of you again, Joe?
Mm-hmm. Always.
Okay, so on that piece of paper, let's put a vertical line down the center of the piece of paper. Now, over on the left, at the top, please write true priorities. So true priorities is the left column. This only takes 60 seconds, and I hope people have paper and they're doing this while they're listening. Please write down your top five priorities. What are your true priorities in life? Maybe number one is family, or maybe number two is health, or maybe number three is family or your community. Maybe four is your faith. Maybe number five is giving back or your legacy or contributing. So write down your true priorities. Now, I know I'm not giving enough time for us to really go into depth, but hopefully people have this and then they can do this in more time over lunch today or with someone they care about over a meal. Okay, let's move over to the right column. Let's put down time priorities. All right, now let's be honest. Let's write down the five things we spend the most time on. I had one gentleman, he said, well, number one is work. Number two, more work. Number three, more work. Number four was commuting and like life chores, like getting gas, paying bills, shopping, doing household work, doing chores, etc. And then number five was family. Family was number five. He realized that on a daily basis, he didn't even spend 1 hour with his wife or with his kids. He was spending 50 to 60 hours a week at work. He was spending time on chores and household responsibilities. And his fifth time priority was family, when he had put it number one. And Joe, your question was, how can we half retire? How can we make sure that we have the financial wherewithal to do more of what we want now and not later? Well, I believe in conjunction with that, we also look at our true priorities. And if we get anything out of this interview, is that if our time priorities are not more of a match for our true priorities, we are leading a life that will live to regrets. Chuck Yeager, the aviation pioneer, said, at the moment of truth, there are either reasons or results. And if we don't now start matching our time priorities more with our true priorities, we will end up with reasons. We will end up with regrets. If we want results, the way to half retire now is to look at the true priorities. And on a daily basis, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes, to do something that honors our Bill of Rights. If we say health is important, maybe it's a 10-minute walk every morning with our dog. If we say family is important, Maybe it's 10 minutes on a daily basis, sitting down and giving them our eyes and ears and not giving advice or interrupting. It's finding out what's really going on. If we say friends are important, maybe it's reaching out to one friend a day, even with it's a text, even with it's an email or a phone call, thinking of you, how's it going? You know, if we say giving back is on our true priority, you and I are lucky, Joe, is that we get to write, we get to speak, we get to coach. Maybe we even get to just post something on social media with an inspiring quote that maybe is just the right words at the right time for someone. In 10 minutes a day, we can give back and contribute to our legacy and hopefully make a positive difference. So one way to half retire is to look at our true priorities and to truly make them our time priorities, even if it's 5 to 10 minutes a day.
Well said. Thank you, Sam. I know it's going to be very valuable to us and certainly to many of our listeners. Thank you quite a bit. Very practical and useful.
You're welcome. The Pope Paul said that tomorrow doesn't start tomorrow. It starts today. So I really hope that people are listening will think, okay, what was one idea that really resonated with me or one story that I really find relatable? All right, what is one thing I will do today to start setting it in motion?
And Sam, we know you have more stories. So going forward, how can people best follow your work?
I really appreciate you asking this, Joe, is that I am a woman on a mission, and I really want us to lead a life of results and not regrets. So I have put a lot of support material on my website. The happiness box is there. A happiness interview is there. There's a facilitator's guide where you can facilitate your own book club or discussion around this. My TEDx talk is on there. So many articles that discuss the things we've been talking about. So if they go to intrigueagency.com, it's INTRIGUE, intrigueagency.com, they will find hopefully all this really inspiring and supportive material where they can have these discussions where if they're kind of running out of energy or clarity, they can pop back in it and hopefully find just the right words at the right time or the right videos that will inspire them to set something in motion that will put the light on in their eyes today. They will never regret it. They'll only regret not doing it sooner.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joe. Thanks, Dennis.
Oh, I very much enjoyed the conversation today with Sam Horn. Joe, what were some of the key points you got from today's conversation?
It's hard to narrow it down because I came away with 2 pages of
Same here.
Dense notes. But right off the top of mind, I would say, first of all, her concept of making a proactive pivot is very powerful and I think very relevant to planning for retirement or half retirement, really getting that direction. And as part of that process, she also talked a lot about matching your time priorities with your true priorities. And I think that's a very healthy process for people to do periodically. But the way she laid it out is very practical and very useful and really is what I'll call an excuse breaker. She really gets at what is really the most important things, what will matter a year from now, and how do you really start to move down that path. So I thought those 2 things were exceptionally powerful. I think her whole concept of preventing regrets is something to really think about, that the procrastination can get in our way. Those things can stop us from really getting after what we want and to get into results as opposed to reasons. So those were, I thought, really compelling high-level points. She also made a great point about change in that it doesn't take as much courage as it takes clarity. And then cutting through the clutter, really appreciating the energy it takes to maintain clutter, I think is very noteworthy. And then finally, her point about you can't do these things and make these changes and these pivots necessarily all by yourself. It's a lot easier if you allow other people to help you. So I thought her line about you can't allow people to jump on your bandwagon if it's in the garage was exceptionally memorable. Don't keep your change agenda to yourself. You've got dreams, you've got things you want to accomplish, projects you want to do. Let people know, and that's going to allow people to connect with you and help you along the way. How about you, Des?
piggybacking off of that, first of all, I love the happiness box exercise. Really very powerful. Take a look at that and do it and share it with the significant other, friend, etc. I think it's very, very powerful. The point about how to create urgency, I should say, she gave a four-step process. Put it on your calendar. Make an appointment with yourself, in my words. Hack the fear. Make it meaningful for you. Make whatever you're going to do meaningful. And I think our fourth point was get an accountability buddy. So being urgent, creating a sense of urgency for yourself around the things that are important to you to help move forward. The other thing that was interesting is the whole concept, Joe, you touched on a little bit about, and we've heard it from other people, is get rid of your clutter. It keeps us, she said something, it keeps us in our current status quo. So take steps towards doing that and freeing yourself up towards what you want to accomplish next and doing the things that are important to you. It was a great conversation.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us today on The Retirement Conversation. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.